Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Paul Tsoor, appearing pro bono publico for the defendant, Asia Blount. We are appealing a very limited issue in this case, specifically in proving that Mr. Blount possessed a firearm to further a drug crime. The government respectfully introduced evidence that violated the federal rules of evidence. Regardless of what the government introduced to prove the other counts in this case, the government only introduced three pieces of evidence to establish this 924C violation. First was prior acts testimony in pursuant to Rule 404B. Second was expert opinion testimony that Mr. Blount possessed the gun in this case to further his drug crime. And third was simply the proximity of the gun to the drugs at the time that Mr. Blount was arrested. I'd like to first focus on the 404B notice issue in this case, as there's a lack of guidance on what that rule requires around the country. Rule 404B states that a prosecution must provide reasonable notice before trial of the general nature of any prior acts evidence it intends to introduce. According to the 11th Circuit in U.S. v. Carrasco and the District of Kansas in U.S. v. Singleton, the prosecution must characterize the prior conduct to a degree that fairly apprises the defendant of its general nature. Now, in this case, the government's written filings did not apprise the defendant that its 404B witness, Chris Gardner, would testify to seeing Mr. Blount carry a firearm during a drug crime.
Well, when he testified, when Gardner testified that he'd seen Blount with the gun during the drug deal, the defense didn't object, right?
Well, there was an objection during the course of Gardner's testimony on this issue. The record is what it is, admittedly. The defense didn't object immediately. But this was the sort of situation where the defense was completely taken by surprise by Gardner's testimony. Again, the whole point of the 404B notice is that the defense gets notice and is apprised of the nature of the evidence that's going to come in. In this case, the defense didn't have any notice that Gardner would testify about seeing Mr. Blount with a gun during a drug crime. So it's reasonable to expect that there to be a slight delay for the defense to recognize this testimony coming in, to understand how this testimony is being used in the context of this case, and to lodge an objection. Now, regarding that notice, the government did file a couple notices here. It filed its first notice that referenced Gardner's proffered statement. Government, only after filing that first notice, filed its superseding indictment, which only then charged Mr. Blount with a 924C violation. Then came the government's second notice, which was completely unrelated to Gardner's expected testimony. The district court then, after all of this, held a pretrial hearing.
What did the first notice say?
The first notice, it was only two sentences long, actually, Your Honor, and it said that there would be testimony consistent with discovery bait stamp numbers 96 and 97. 96 and 97 was a proffered statement made by Chris Gardner in this case. There were 11 paragraphs, I believe, in that statement, 10 of which explained how Mr. Gardner saw Mr. Blount with drugs in general. That went to the count one in this case. The 11th paragraph was the only paragraph that discussed guns. And the statement was that Mr. Gardner saw Mr. Blount on one occasion in the Eagle Park neighborhood carrying a firearm.
Well, now, doesn't that constitute notice?
That does constitute notice of the fact that Mr. Gardner was going to testify about possession. Now, possession is also a very important part in this case because the government had to prove possession on count two, the 922G count, and as part of the 924C count. The government had to prove possession and that possession was in furtherance of a drug crime. So Gardner's proffered statement that said that he saw Mr. Blount carrying a gun on one occasion was definitely sufficient notice to establish that Gardner was going to testify about possession. But the point here isn't the possession point. It's that in furtherance of point that's missing for the 924C violation. And again, more important.
He did say one time, just saw him carrying a gun one time, and doesn't say anything about that was in connection with drugs.
No, in fact,
That's your objection.
That's the point.
There would be some testimony about a possession of a gun, right?
We did know that there was going to be testimony about possession of a gun, that Gardner happened to see Mr. Blount carrying a gun on one occasion. And we thought, or the defense thought, I wasn't trial counsel, the defense thought that that would go to the possession count. Again, at the time that this proffered statement was introduced as notice, there wasn't even a 924C count charged. It was just the 922G count. And so the defense reasonably thought that Gardner was going to testify about possession, introduce evidence about possession, not possession in further.
Well, that started to cut kind of thin, though. I mean, you know he's going to say he had a gun.
Yes.
The only difference is he said, well, and he also had drugs when he had the gun.
The proffer doesn't make that connection. And that's what's missing in this case. And in fact, the way I read Gardner's proffered statement, the fact that he doesn't say and make the connection there is actually evidence that Gardner wasn't going to testify about seeing Mr. Blount with a gun during a drug crime, because the rest of the proffered statement goes back to Mr. Blount's interactions with Gardner. The proffer simply could have said that Gardner was going to testify about seeing Mr. Blount with a gun during one of these transactions, but it doesn't.
Going back to when this testimony came in, that's the government said in its brief that the only objection defense counsel made was to a question being leading.
No,
not to the. So that's incorrect.
The objection wasn't to the question being leading. On page 93 and 94 of our appendix, on 93, the government asked Mr. Gardner, actually a statement that shouldn't even be a 404B statement, tell the jury what purpose you thought there was for Mr. Blount to possess this gun in this case. Essentially an expert question coming from a 404B witness. That's when the defense objected. And said that it was, as to the defendant's purpose, it was calling for speculation. So it wasn't a leading question.
So it was calling for speculation.
That's what the record says on 94.
So I'm just saying it didn't preserve the issue as you're arguing it now. That is that the government should not have introduced that in light of the fact that it failed to give notice to the defendant.
Again, the objection could have been better. It could have been closer to the beginning of Gardner's testimony, but that is the objection that's on.
I'm just saying it was never made on that grounds.
It wasn't clearly made on that grounds, no, Your Honor.
But it really wasn't made on that grounds at all. It was made on other grounds. I'm just trying to clarify. I just want to make sure I'm right
in terms of
the standard of review that we should apply here. So your position would be because there was an objection, period, we're not in plain error land. I take it.
That's where I'm going with this. But to that end, actually, Your Honor, I do believe that even under the plain error standard, this case needs to be reversed. There was error here. The error was plain. And under this court's reasoning in United States versus Ross, the defense only needs to establish that the jury verdict in this case was actually affected by the error. In this case, there were two pieces of error, two significant pieces of error, Borm's testimony, Gardner's testimony, and the jury heavily relied on that. Indeed, the government mentioned those two pieces of evidence in its closing argument.
Wasn't Blount given? Didn't the notice mention the fact that Gardner was involved with Blount in cocaine?
His proffered statement did mention that Gardner was
the cocaine. Mentioned the gun. Didn't connect them explicitly, but. Isn't that pretty close?
We don't think it is, Your Honor. And again, for the reason...
Mentioned the cocaine, and then Blount did know that the government was going to, you know, have this expert testimony about guns being used in connection with drugs. So wouldn't that alert him to the fact that Gardner was going to connect the two?
It certainly alerted the defense to the fact that perhaps the day before the superseding indictment was actually introduced and filed, that the government was considering bringing the 924C count. That's why the expert notice came in the same day that Gardner's proffered statement was noticed. But that still doesn't make the key connection here, respectfully, Your Honor. There's still the missing connection that Gardner himself was going to provide that 924C testimony.
It's not in the notice, but... Wouldn't it be obvious that that was a serious danger, that he was going to connect them?
I don't know how obvious it is. I don't think it is. I don't read the Proffert statement like that at all.
We know people use guns in connection with cocaine, and we know that this person has seen the defendant with a gun and also is involved with cocaine. So, you know. Anyway, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Tour. Mr. Simonson?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Andrew Simonson on behalf of the government. The first point that the government would like to make in this matter is a following up on Your Honor's point earlier, that at the time of trial on both of the issues being presented by the opposition in this case, that there was no specific objection at the time of trial to preserve these issues. The two issues that are being discussed are the notice, improper notice on 404B, and according to the opposition, at the particular time when those types of questions were being asked, there was no specific objection at the time of trial to a notice violation. Also, based on the claim on improper use of or in violation of 704B and 702, when the questions were asked at that time during trial, there was no objection lodged at that time as well. Therefore, the government's argument is that on both of these issues, that a plain error standard would apply.
Going back to that first issue, though, you concede that the proffer never connected Blount's possession of the gun to the drug deal. I mean, you think, I don't know, perhaps it could have been inferred or it shouldn't have been a great surprise that this testimony came in, but it wasn't there.
Yes, Your Honor. The government's view is that in 404B notice, it is required to notice the general nature of the extrinsic acts. Now, there is no requirement for the particularity of a charging document, and that's noticed by the Senate Judiciary Committee after the 1991 change in the law there. What did occur here was that the government provided a proffer with 11 paragraphs. The proffer statement that was given was just over one page long. It was not an extensive proffer report that was given. Five or six of the paragraphs had to do with Mr. Gardner talking about Mr. Blount's narcotics trafficking activities, and one of the paragraphs clearly talked about the fact that he had seen him with a .357 at one point, and that Mr. Blount had talked about having a 9mm at another point.
Right. So it wasn't specifically spelled out, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then the other thing is, are you arguing that Blount should have objected before trial to Gardner's testimony that he'd seen Blount with a gun during the crack cocaine deal? You know, because how could he have known to make that objection based on that proffer?
The government's position there is the opposition's brief said many times there's no way that they could have known what the government was doing, that they were completely surprised at the time of trial. The government's position was if they were completely surprised and that testimony was so vital that an objection would have been made very quickly, that it would not take a long time for something like that to sink in, that an objection would have been made very quickly and should have been made at that time. There's also in the opposition's brief various points made regarding the government's closing argument in which it discussed the information regarding Mr. Gardner and Mr. Officer Borm regarding his expert testimony. As the government stated in its closing, it pointed out that part of the basis for Officer Borm making his expert opinion was the proximity of the gun. And actually, in the closing argument, it was stated that that was part of his basis. There was no discussion in the closing argument of the defendant's mental state. Also, in the closing argument, the government discussed Mr. Gardner saying that Mr. Blount had showed him a firearm. There was no emphasis at that time that Mr. Gardner had said that he had seen him with a firearm during a narcotics transaction. Unless your honors have any additional questions that I can answer at this time, the government will hand over the rest of its time.
Thank you, Mr. Simonson.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Tsur, how much time does he have? No time, but yeah, you have anything further? You can have a minute.
The only thing I'd like to point out to this court is that at the pretrial hearing, after all the written notice had been filed, the government stated what it thought Gardner would testify about. And the statement was that Gardner was only going to testify about drugs. No mention about a gun at all, let alone the fact that Gardner was going to testify about seeing a gun during and in relation to a drug crime. So that fact, coupled with this vague written proffered statement, I think further enhances our position that we really didn't have adequate notice prior to trial. Unless there's anything else.
Well, thank you, Mr. Simons. And you're appointed, so we're very grateful to you for your efforts on behalf.
Thank you, sir.